On this next reel of CUL movies, we take a trip back to 1987 via the 1996 critically acclaimed Fargo. What's our take on what some would call a Coen Brothers masterpiece? Do we think it's deserving of all the praise or better off getting run through the wood chipper? Next up, we come back to the present to look at Paranorman, a 3D stop-motion puppetry extravaganza brought to us by the creators of the much-loved 2009 film Coraline. Has lightning struck twice, or is this movie and its viewers cursed to a slow, agonizing death? Last but certainly not least, we look ahead to this November's upcoming Kung Fu bloodletting of The Man with the Iron Fists. Is this RZA-directed martial arts epic getting us excited to head to the theaters? All that plus updated casting news on RoboCop, an interesting rumor about John Travolta's next project, and some possible comic book ensemble action in store for the Wachowskis. All this and more on the next CUL Movies Reel 119. So, you were having sex with a little fella then.
I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. My name is Jeff, and I would like to introduce my funny-looking co-hosts, Ray and Steve. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good.
Okie dokie.
Okie dokie. Anyway,
That works.
So, long time no see, Steven.
I know.
He lives.
He lives. He's alive.
I live. I know. I had to take a little break because of craziness at work. But I'm back and I'm here.
Yay. We're so happy.
Back on the track.
Let's move into news.
On the mark.
Hugh Laurie drops out of the RoboCop remake.
Yep. So,
just the way you said that was so funny. Yep.
Definitely, he's supposedly he's been. Variety said he's definitely out, which is funny because now, the people involved with the movie say, "Well, he was never really in." So, I guess he was never confirmed as being attached officially. But now the rumor is that he may be being replaced with Clive Owen of all people. Mm. So, this makes, and they mentioned it here, it's got a pretty impressive cast of people. So we've got Joel Kinnaman in the lead, Gary Oldman, Samuel Jackson, Jackie Earle Haley, Jennifer Errol, Michael K. Williams, and then we would have Clive Owen added on top of that. So definitely shaping up to be an interesting cast. They are, I guess, supposedly going to be supposed to be start shooting soon. So I'd imagine we would hear something either way. So this movie just keeps popping in and out of news. So I figured I would put this on here because we seem to be, getting a lot of it. So anyway, any thoughts? Any? I'm kind of disappointed. I really wanted to see Hugh get the ability to be a complete villain instead of sort of a pseudo villain.
More Hugh Laurie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I really do like Hugh Laurie. Mm-hmm. He's got such an interesting character. Mm-hmm. But I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure that I'm excited about this movie as much as information is coming out about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'm really. I mean, again, it's one of those. It's a reboot. We've been rebooting everything. I don't really get why we need to, you know, just stuff like that.
Right.
This is probably one movie in particular that I would not have thought of rebooting.
Agreed.
You know. So.
Yeah, and I think it might be want to reboot because they want to make sure it has more modern sensibilities, but I suppose they could have done a continuation just by, like, upgrading RoboCop or something.
Yeah, there could have been a continuation, or even if they had just redone it, like, RoboCop 2012 or whatever, and just went ahead and somehow there's been RoboCops for several years and this is the next generation, you know, or something, but to kind of reboot it from jump, I don't know.
I sort of had this thought earlier about reboots in general, where I'm thinking about, say, like, the original RoboCop came out in 1987, so that was, like, what, 20-some years ago,
so 25.
Okay, so 25 years ago. So if, let's just go back to 87, 25 years from 87 is what, 1950-something?
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just wondering.
62.
I mean, I don't think it's, I think part of the problem with the whole reboot thing is that we are, you know, we sort of keep movies in our memories more because we consume them. We have them on home video. We have them on DVD. You know what? Mm-hmm. We own these movies. We remember them. We watch them many, many, many times, where that wasn't quite the thing back, you know, 20 years ago. You know, very rarely did people have this humongous library of media to consume at will. So I think part of it is that we remember all these movies. I think if we were to jump back 25 years and they were remaking a movie from the 50s, I don't think we would all be as, like, freaked out about it or being like, oh, why are they redoing it? You know, it was great the way it was.
True. I mean, I kind of get the reason why. Mm-hmm. a lot of the things that they're doing reboots of course, were exciting in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Most of the reboots lately have been coming out from the 80s. We get that. Right. They had great followings then. They're trying to bring them to the new, you know, bring them back to the new group of people who are here. You know, it's another generation, really. I get it. But haven't they learned that a lot of it is the new generation is not going to see these movies? It's maybe the people who remember it from the 80s that are really going to see what they've done to it now, and we're the ones tearing them apart.
Right.
You know?
But that means that there's people that are going in the seats. They're basically, it's all fan service. And in addition, they will get some newer people being like, oh, yeah, I heard about RoboCop. It was awesome. Those movies were supposed to be really cool. Now let's see what it is with this new technology and everything updated. And yeah, let's see the new RoboCop, basically the new stuff from, you know, I think, it, you know, it's basically, this is Ate Your Daddy's movie fan.
Yeah. But I don't hear them talking about it. I mean, I don't see in 25 years that we're still going to be talking about the remake of Fright Night with Colin Farrell.
No, we're not going to really talk about remakes.
Whereas
we're going to be talking about remakes of new stuff. There's going to be the new remake of Looper in 25 years.
I mean, it does. I mean, it takes.
I don't know. I'm throwing stuff out here.
It happens. It's very rare that it happens, but there are some times when a remake is more, you know, known in its history than the original. Like, the always one that pops up in my mind is The Thing.
True.
You know,
okay.
That was a movie from the 50s that was remade in the 80s, and everybody remembers John Carpenter's. Very few people know that that was even a remake of a movie. So
The Fly.
Right.
You could also say
The Fly. Yeah. True. The truth. Well, you know, and I think, you know what, in the big picture, though, The Thing kind of did do the right thing. But like talked about, they actually didn't. They kind of made it a carry on.
Right. You
know, they didn't try to say right out, we're making a remake of the movie from the 80s and the 50s. It was we're moving it on.
We're
continuing the story, right?
Well, they weren't continuing the story. They were the previous one, because literally it goes from the end of the most recent thing to the John Carpenter thing.
Right. But still, they added to the story rather than just tried to reboot the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, we can continue on the worst reboot ever, which was, of course, 21 Jump Street. But we're not. So, anyway, next topic. I'm going this forever.
Moving on.
All right.
So what's going on with John Travolta?
Yeah, go for it.
No, I'm asking what's going on with John Travolta.
Oh, you're asking me. Oh, duh. Well, I put this one in kind of for Steven. I didn't know if you were a Troma fan, Steven.
At times.
But this was like one of the weirdest casting rumors I remember hearing in a long time. So for people who don't know, there was a movie house from the mid-80s called Troma. They're famous for a movie called The Toxic Avenger, among other sort of really, I would call them sort of like B films right off the bat. Like they're made intentionally to be B films. So anyway, there was this one that they were really well known for in 1984 called The Toxic Avenger. And I guess here we go again with a, I don't know if this is going to be a reboot, remake, whatever. But yeah. John Travolta, of all people, is being penned to star in this remake, reboot, whatever. Yeah, wow.
Not as the titular hero, according to Variety.
Right, right. But still.
Okay, it's about attaching names. Now, one thing I did notice in here, something about, is there a suggestion to make Nicolas Cage the villain in the scenario?
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be a bad idea. If you really want a B-movie, sure.
Right.
Well, okay, here's the thing with Trauma. They are so bad. Like, their stuff is this, like, intentionally bad and intentionally gory.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you've never seen a Troma movie. So, the Toxic Avenger is kind of this slow janitor guy who gets dumped into a big vat of toxic waste, and his skin is actually melting off of him, and he becomes like this anti-hero. Mm-hmm. Through this whole thing, defending them from bad people and all kinds of stuff. Well, I could see where they would pull in a big name. Do you know what I mean? Like but they're going to keep it hokey. It's not going to be made into a straight movie.
Right.
You know, if they're going to remake this, they're not going to make it into like a high class version of
if Travolta is really doing this, this is more of Travolta's going in to have a little bit of fun.
Exactly.
And maybe for a little bit of extra money, you know.
Right. He might be playing his boss or something in the movie.
This is the filler in between his big hit movies. Of course, what was the last movie he was in? Savages? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but you're absolutely right. Like, I could see them pulling in some names of people who are like huge fans of Troma, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And then having them do bit parts or that kind of thing, just to be able to say like they were in it. And I could see, you know, and when you're like a Travolta, or as we're going to talk about later, a Quentin Tarantino, and mm-hmm. you've made a bajillion dollars,
right?
You don't have to be that selective. And even if you do this movie, it's not going to end your career.
And these type of things where, you know, when I see a big name star play in what I would think of as a bad movie.
Yeah.
Or would most likely be a bad movie.
Most likely them, a straight to DVD release.
Right. Something like that. I just think of them as paycheck movies. They're the filler movies. Yeah. It's making sure you still have some income coming in. Sure. You don't need it. But, you know, it's like, hey, let's have a little bit of fun and go into this hooky movie. And I never consider it's like, oh, this star was in such and such a movie, in such and such a movie, which is terrible, and the actor's bad. No, it's like looking at their real achievements is where I'm really looking at. Like, still a Schwarzenegger fan from True Lies, while, you know, you look at other movies of his. Maybe Conan was okay. Yeah, he has a bunch of other crap movies that I can't think of off the top of my head.
Hercules.
But Hercules.
That Hercules movie, yeah.
But, you know, he's done bad movies, but he's also done some great stuff. And I still think he was a great actor. And the ones that there was crap on, it was a paycheck. And, you know, they might have been phoning it in to help out with the movie. So
see, my first thought is not to say that when a big name actor is in a movie such caliber as this, my first thought isn't always paycheck for some reason, but I always sort of imagine like if I grew up and I really loved to rent Troma of the movies and watch them all, and I really love the Toxic Avenger, and later on I become some big name famous actor, like when you hear that somebody's remaking it or redoing it, you're kind of like, I would love to be in that movie. Like that,
right.
You know,
it's a fun movie.
You know, right. So
they're probably not seeking him out unless they heard he was a big fan.
Right.
And then they're going, would you be in our movie? You know, this is one of those ones where he's probably hearing there's a remake and he's just like, oh my God, I'd love to do that. Exactly. Right. And, right. And right. I think of, you know, I definitely think of it as you get to a point where as a star, you can either take yourself way too damn seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And just turn everything down until you get the perfect thing, or you can do a movie like this for fun and show that you're still reachable and human,
right?
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And that you're actually someone who you're serious about what you're doing, but you're gonna have fun at it. Do you know what I mean? Some of those people who are like, I turn this down and I turn that down because it's not to the quality of my abilities and all that bullshit. Fuck you. I don't like you. Do you know what I mean? You're not the kind of actor I want to have a beer with or hang out with. But if, you know, if you're John Travolta and you're going to do a serious movie, then you're going to be Edna Turnblatt and then you're going to be in the Toxic Avenger.
Uh-huh.
I don't care who – that's kind of cool. You know what I mean? That's
– And it really depends on the – it really depends on the actor, though, because
yeah,
there's somewhere I can see – Yes,
I can't see Meryl Streep in trauma movie. I can't see Meryl Streep in a trauma movie.
You can't see Meryl Streep in Rabid Grannies.
Right, exactly. I can't really see
that. Brad Pitt in Poltergeist: Night of the Chicken Dead.
You know what? I probably can. To be honest with you, I probably could see Brad. I don't think I could see Angelina in it.
Yeah, but Brad, I think Brad Pitt would have a lot of does a lot of stuff. Exactly. Like, I think Brad Pitt really had. I think one of the reasons Brad Pitt did a Fight Club was because he thought he was going to have a blast doing it.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think I see Brad having a fun time with it, but I don't know about.
Yeah. In these type of movies, you know, you have some of those like John Travolta. If he goes into this one, he's definitely thinking, "Yeah, I'm going to have a blast. You know, doing this. It's just going to be fun. That's the point of doing it, not because it's going to be great or anything, but fun." While I can see other people being like, "I don't think I really have fun with that." So, you know, like the Meryl Streep analogy. Meryl Streep would be in it because I don't think she would enjoy being in it.
Mm-hmm.
While John Travolta would. So,
no. Nope.
Agree.
Mm-hmm. Moving on.
Agreed. Speaking of taking self too seriously now.
Oh. Is that a shot, Steven?
It's a total shot.
All right. So, Mr. Affleck. He's directed some good movies lately.
He's got Argo coming out soon here.
Yeah, he directed The Town, which was really, I think all of us liked The Town. So of course, you know, there's a lot of buzz going on right now about the Justice League movie. Of course, with the success of the Avengers, you know, everyone who has access to these sort of properties is scrambling to, you know, get their ensemble superhero cast movies out as fast as they can, right? So we've got the Justice League, and there was some rumors swirling about that Mr. Affleck would be directing or was in line or in talks to direct. And he straight up denied it. And not only did he deny it, he used that denial to take a shot at the basically the entertainment blogosphere. He basically said, I'm not working on the Justice League. One of the problems with entertainment websites is that they need to fill pages, and that's how rumors get started. Justice League sounds really exciting, but it's not something I'm working on.
Now, here's the thing is, though. It just means he's not working on it. Doesn't mean that he will not eventually be working on it. It just means he's not working on it. There's no deals in the works or anything. Just he's not working on it. So it's no, I'm not actually working on it. So don't think that I'm the director of the movie. Now, if that changes in the future, well, great. But speaking of changes in the future, though.
Yeah, but I just really love that he took the chance to sort of launch that volley across the bow.
Yeah.
of the basic news reporting of most of the entertainment sites.
Mm-hmm. I love how Coming Soon actually quoted it verbatim.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, and when I say taking self too seriously,
mm-hmm.
I just mean when it comes to where they came from and where they started and everything. I feel like Affleck has definitely gotten a little snooty. Whereas, you know, his partner in crime has continued to do kind of fun movies and seems to be more of the one who's still hanging out with the, having beers on the block with the boys. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Well, you know, you win a couple Academy Awards for stuff and
yeah,
know, it changes
gets your head. Gets to your head a little bit. Yeah, exactly. What about the Wachowskis?
It's one of the siblings. Yeah, I just call them the Wachowskis now. I don't attempt to assign any sort of gender role to either of them.
Exactly.
So basically, right on the heels of the Ben Affleck story swirling about, of course, they're like, well, if he's not directing it, who possibly could be directing it, or who, you know? So now we've heard that the Wachowskis are now in the sights of Warner Brothers to direct, take the helm, so to speak, of this. I have mixed feelings about the Wachowskis. I love some of the things they do, and I hate some of the things they do. So, you know, the first Matrix movie and V for Vendetta, I loved. Speed Racer was an abomination.
Speed Racer.
Cloud Atlas looks interesting. That's a discussion for another reel. So I don't know. What do you guys feel about the Wachowskis taking their stab at a superhero ensemble? Yeah.
I think they need to find, somebody, you know, like give it to McGee.
Okay.
Or give it to somebody who has some action adventure kind of stuff. Like, I think Avengers falling into the lap of Joss Whedon was the windfall that they needed.
Seriously, wait a minute. I got it. I know exactly what they should do.
Okay.
Kevin Smith.
I mean,
that's my opinion. I mean, there can be some tragedies regarding that, but yeah. I would love to see Kevin Smith do it.
He would definitely give them all a smarmy, cynical attitude.
Oh, and by the way, he wouldn't do it.
Oh, I know. No, yeah. But I'm just saying.
After Tracy Morgan, Bruce Willis cop out movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he's going to do it.
I could just see like Batman being like, ugh, again. Or, I mean, not Batman, like Superman or whatever. You know, just kind of being like.
Have you ever read like Kevin Smith's Green Arrow or anything like that? What he has actually written in comic books?
No.
Because. No, I mean, just because you've seen his, you know, the Kevin Smith movies, it's nothing like how he writes for comic books, because he is, just like Joss Whedon, a comic book fan.
Oh, I know.
But no, you know, what I really would like to see is, you know, Kevin Smith direct, but Jeff Loeb write.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean,
for all you comic fans, think about that.
I mean, what other, I'm trying to think of what other Kevin Smith things that he's directed but not written himself. I know the TV show that he worked on, obviously, he didn't write. But I can't think of movie-wise. I'm not up enough on my Kevin Smith to know. But yeah, I don't know. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head that I would be like, I would definitely have this person direct it, you know. Mm-mm. But I don't know how I feel about the Wachowskis, you know.
Yeah, we'll just have to see where they go with it.
Well, we'll have to see more when it gets closer to release, because right now everything is speculation. I mean, they even said in this, well, here's an idea. You know, Warner Brothers is jazzed about Cloud Atlas, which looks like it actually releases at the end of October.
I hate to interrupt you, Jeff.
Yeah.
But I guess he directed Cop Out, but he did not write it. So
okay.
maybe we need to rethink that. Maybe he needs to write it and not direct it.
Maybe.
It could be.
Although I'd love to see a Jeff Loeb written movie.
Yeah.
Because I'm a huge fan of Jeff Loeb. Or Grant Morrison. I'm a new Grant. But and they've all done stuff in the DC universe. Mostly Batman stuff now that I'm thinking about it, but still. But they have some great writers right now with the New 52. So they've got people to work with. Although I do have to say the new Justice League run, not their best book right now. Best drawn, because it was drawn by Jim Lee. But anyways, that's going off on a different tangent.
Right.
That's it for the news. Let's move into...
Tell me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Fargo, directed by Joel Coen, starring Frances McDormand, William H. Macy, and Steve Buscemi. You know that Steve Buscemi is kind of a funny-looking guy.
Are you going to do the whole rest of the episode in that accent?
No, I'm not.
That's isn't that natural for you?
I know when to not use that accent.
Isn't that your natural accent being from...
No, I'm from southern Minnesota, not northern Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
Don't get me wrong, because when I was working at the student loan servicer in Woodbury, up there in the Twin Cities area, we did have our secretary and this lady back in cashiering, well, they really did talk like this. So I have heard the authentic accent. Mm-hmm. So I know exactly what it's talking about.
Well, I know the talk like a Wisconsin.
Wisconsin's still a little bit different.
Yeah, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. But yes, I am from that general area, but I'm from the southern area where they talk more like the Tom Brokaw Chicago Midwest accent.
Right. You're not from Montrose, like in Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Right.
Anyway. Let's throw the elephant in the room straight in the middle.
Okay.
Wait, was this even taking place anywhere near Fargo?
They
kept having to go up to Fargo for something.
Because Fargo is in North Dakota.
Right.
He met them, I thought. In the beginning, doesn't he meet them somewhere? Like, are they came from Fargo? The two guys, Steve Buscemi and the...
Because everything took place in Brainerd in the Twin Cities.
Right.
But except I think they make a mention of them coming out of Fargo or driving from there. So...
Yeah. Okay, but going ahead.
Talk about this movie. We can't do anything but talk with the accent.
I know.
It just keeps popping up, don't you know?
Oh.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about the accent, okay, there's been a lot. There was a lot of speculation. Of course, on the Blu-ray, I watched the little backstory as well. But there's also a few comments from the critics regarding. You know, basically the Coen brothers and why they actually decided to, you know, pick on Minnesota, basically. And I think that's the interesting part. Like, there's a big reaction to the accent and their choice to actually go to the Twin Cities. And there's been good and bad. You know, apparently it played really well everywhere but there. You know, there people were protesting and upset and furious and all that kind of stuff. But I thought they were trying to be respectful in the setting, to be honest with you, and just be real. Whereas, like, when we talk about Drop Dead Gorgeous, they're just making fun of Minnesotans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've seen Drop Dead Gorgeous, you know that, which you should have because we all did. You know, that was just a crack on Minnesotans.
Right. You know,
whereas this was just the movie being set there. Of course, the people are going to have the accent.
Right. Yes. And,
I don't know what the big deal is.
I think it's entertaining. And I think I think there's a sort of a juxtaposition in the fact that, I don't know, maybe it's just a stereotype. But when I think of people who have... people from northern Minnesota or people who generally have that accent, even people from Wisconsin, I think of them as like the nicest white bread, straight laced
right.
people you possibly could have. So to see like all this kind of stuff going on, it just sort of makes it funny. I don't know why.
Well, did you see the Blu-ray or the extras on this?
No, I did not.
Which, well, I think you're on path with why the Coens said they did it here.
Okay.
Was if this kind of stuff can happen here,
right?
It can happen anywhere,
right?
You know, and that was really, that's what I mean. Yeah, they grew up in the area, you know, mm-hmm. and then they were raised in Arizona or something like that, you know. But that's one of the things that they said. It's like, if you can have this kind of horrible crime happen in the center of the Midwest, in like this Holy Land where everybody is all nice to each other and all Christian and all this kind of stuff, if you can have this happen here, that's just like, you know, it's like shitting on the president's porch, basically. You know, it's like, it's not going to, you know, you would never expect it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it did. So how is it going to rock everything?
Right. Basically.
And
just to confirm before we move on, the opening scene of the movie where he meets them in the bar, it is Fargo, North Dakota.
Okay. Thank you.
Although it was recorded in Northeast Minneapolis, but it's supposed to be Fargo.
Northeast.
Now, I do have to say this. Here's what I think about this, is these really are characters. So, mm-hmm. and people have to realize there are people who talk exactly like this and act exactly like this. I know. I've seen them. And when they say it's the Minnesota nice, as Hermit said regarding her accent, they're not kidding. These are the nicest people in all the world you will ever meet. And I have to say that this kind of juxtaposition of Marge. I love that character. I love her, yeah, Marge.
She's got a great character.
Oh, that's hi, Marge. Anyway, but she's her character is extremely that stereotypical Northern Minnesotan character. And that's really a person. I can really see it as a person. So I felt like, despite the whole funny accent thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was an authentic person. I really felt like this was a real person. And it just was so interesting to see this type of woman, one being pregnant.
Yeah.
And having this Minnesota nice be like, oh, yeah. Oh, really? Oh, okay. I'll be there in a jiff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
And she drives out. Oh, the prowler needs a jump. And she drives out and she's examining a triple homicide murder scene. And just the way she does it, it's like you would think this type of person would never have seen this type of thing. It would be like shocked and amazed. Like, oh, how could this happen in this area? But she's like just going.
It's very, very matter of fact. Everything is matter of fact. Yeah.
And she bends over being like, oh, I'm feeling nauseous. Oh, no, it's just morning sickness. I mean, just the way she did it, in addition to being like, I'm surprised she's acting this way, it also felt very authentic.
Mm-hmm.
So despite the accent and everything, sure, that's kind of a funny little thing, doing a little bit of a stereotype, but she felt like a real person. I mean, even when she was interviewing the girls, which has got to be the funniest scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was funny looking. How is he funny looking? Well, I don't know. He was just funny looking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The funny looking one? Oh, so you slept with the funny looking one?
Oh, so right. You slept with the little person, okay.
Right.
It's just great that she's a woman. She knows exactly what her job is and what she needs to do. And the whole matter of fact thing, and honestly, that really is a Minnesota nice person. That's a real person. I'm sorry.
Well, you go from the Minnesota nice
mm-hmm.
to the two bad guys. Let's talk about the bad guys for a moment. Steve Buscemi, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, and the Swede.
Yeah, Gare. Gare Grimsrud.
Yeah, that's right. So you've got those two.
The psycho.
Shimmy, who never speaks, and then Garrett, who you never know what's going on in his mind.
Yeah.
He looks like he's going to blow at any moment. You know, just like at any moment, he's just going to lose his shit.
Peter's.
Yeah.
Peter's story.
Yeah. it's sort of the two. I mean, it's like, again, you've got two opposites. Like, they're both not nice guys, but you've got these two characters remind me of, I don't know if you guys have ever saw the cartoon Two Stupid Dogs, but it's like Big Dog and Little Dog, and Steve Buscemi is just like the hyperactive little dog barking constantly, like won't shut up, you know. That's it. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. You'll see how you like it.
Yeah, I'm just going to be quiet. Well, I'm just going to sit here and be quiet.
Yep. He just keeps talking. It's like, oh my God. But yeah, I mean, it's a great thing to hear those two. I think even though, you know, Peter Stormare doesn't really, I mean, he had like the role of a lifetime. Here's your role, dude. Just sit here in this car or in this room with Steve Buscemi and show no emotion. Like, just sit there and it's like the best role ever. But he does it so well, you know. It just, those two, they crack me up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you know his background and you know that he's like, you know, basically like a Shakespearean actor, you know, done a bunch of stuff in New York and all that stuff. So it's just hilarious that when he's playing this role and he does it well, is a role with him not really saying anything. I don't even know if he could probably count the amount of lines or words he says,
right,
in like one hand, you know. But yeah, those two are just these great little sort of archetypes of bad guys, you know. So I love them. In fact, I think in a funny way, I almost want to say that the Peter's character is one of my favorites in the movie, just because.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree with you 100%. And it's mainly just because, like I said, it's just like he's, again, I feel like he is a very realistic person from that area in some ways. In that it's like, you're quiet, you're nice, you treat people, you know, he's outwardly treating people with respect, mostly, right. You know what I mean? But at the same time, like, at any moment, you just don't know when he's going to go
crazy. Yeah, he's going to go, just go nuts.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like the same thing that we go through with Lundegaard, you know, and the fact that Lundegaard, you know, he has this perfect everything. He has the ability to, you know, pretty much buy anything he wants because of the father-in-law and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But yet he wants to, you know, he wants to kill his wife.
No, he wants to ransom his wife.
Well, he wants his ransom, right?
He wants to do is have her kidnapped, the ransom, and they get her back.
Right. He wants the money.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he has the ability to get it. So it's like, what the hell?
Right. Well, he doesn't want to have to go ask for it because he can already tell that the father doesn't like him. Like,
at all. Yeah.
You know, so I don't want to go groveling to my father-in-law for money. But the interesting thing about this is that he wanted to be in this movie so badly. So he, like, I guess
I heard that. Yeah. I read that. I saw that too.
Yeah. He did two readings for the part, and then he became convinced that he was the best man for the role. When the Coens didn't get back to him, he flew to New York, where they were starting production, and said, "I'm very, very worried that you're going to screw up this movie by giving this role to somebody else. It's my role, and I'll shoot your dogs if you don't give it to me."
Joking, of course.
So, yeah, he really, really wanted this role, and he was good in it, you know.
He doesn't say it like that on the Blu-ray, FYI.
He doesn't say it.
He doesn't say it that way on the Blu-ray. The Blu-ray, it said that he read for them twice, and they couldn't make up their mind, so they wanted to see some more actors in New York, and he found out they were going to be in New York, so he flew to New York. He flew to New York under an assumed name, and got in to see them
again.
And came in as Lundegaard, basically.
Nice.
And that's how he finally won them over.
Sweet.
But that's what he says. You know. I'm sure he's not going to tell the press he threatened them. Be like, it's possible.
Right. Yeah. But this is like the classic, like, bumbling. Everybody in this movie, except for like Margie, is like the bumbling idiot. Like, everybody's screwing everything up.
And yet, here's the other juxtaposition, as you said. she should be the bumbling idiot in this one, to be honest with you, because she's kind of the cop who's kind of coming in on this situation, being completely in the dark.
Right.
And she's pregnant, and it's snowing, and it's all these things. Like, you would think that she would be the one who is struggling more than anybody else.
Right.
And she just saunters through the investigation, dotting her eyes, crossing her T's.
It's the tortoise and the hare philosophy all over again.
Well, right.
Well,
she's, you know, the funny thing about it is she's the main character. Like, she's pretty much the main character in this movie, and you don't even get to her for like a half an hour.
Yeah.
She's not even in the first half hour of the movie. So it's pretty interesting. The interaction between her and her husband, though, I love the fact he is just like so, like, non-existent, like just kind of there. Just, but he's such a nice guy. Like, I could tell that he's a nice guy, even though he like shows no emotion. He's like, no, you gotta have breakfast. You gotta, you know, I'm gonna get up, make you some eggs.
Eggs. Oh, they announced it. Oh, really? Yeah, London 3 said.
Yeah.
I'm going to be on the 3-cent stamp. Oh, honey, that's awesome. That's great. It's just the 3-cent
That's a Minnesota family. It's just like, you know, any accomplishment is a great thing, whether it's you got on the 29-cent stamp or the 3-cent stamp. It's just, oh, everybody needs the 3-cent stamps because whenever they raise the postage.
Right.
I mean, she's always looking on the bright side of life because, I mean, she's one where, sure, there's this triple homicide happen, but she's like, oh, it's all going to work out. Let's get through the motions of following up on this and find everything out. Because she never seems to really get angry or anything. She's just doing her job, and she knows she's doing her job, and she seems to like her job.
Right.
When the topics here is favorite characters, it's Margie.
Yeah.
This movie would have been so much better if the only thing that it was about was Margie. I mean, sure, we run into the other characters because she runs into the other characters, but it's a Margie movie. That's what this movie should have been all about.
My opinion. Yeah, I mean, I enjoy the other characters so much. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Margie, and Frances McDormand did an awesome job sort of bringing that character to life. I mean, I would have never guessed in a million years that she didn't grow up in that area with that accent. I mean, she had like two or three vocal coaches that like helped her, you know, sort of nail that thing. But they all said that she sort of took to it pretty quickly. Favorite character for me, actually, I love William H. Macy's character just because he is so, I mean, he plays that sort of smarmy car salesman so well. Just, I could totally see him being a real person in this universe. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I totally believe he exists, and I love the fact that he tries to lie so much and doesn't really do that great of a job of lying most of the time. And he's just, the looks on his face, they just get me every time. The scene with Margie and him when he's interviewing him.
Oh, yeah.
I just love it. You know, I could watch that scene over and over again just because I love when he's just like, but no, you see, I have the thing here. And, you know, I'm telling you what I, you know, and he's just, you know, you could see the pedaling going on, trying to figure out, you know, which direction he's going. And so I am so happy that he was so persistent in trying to get that role.
He did an awesome job with that role.
Yeah.
Probably one of the reasons why I liked Marge the best was because I watched her scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're not going to go into my whole thing about hiding and running and hiding with people.
Y'all keep talking. I'm going to disconnect and come back.
Yeah, we might need to restart this call because I'm losing everybody.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I'm just getting a really bad... I'm getting really bad reception. Sorry.
Okay. I'm gonna try resetting my connection, too. Be right back.
Okay. Because maybe it's Jeff.
Okie dokie there.
Oh, it was you. Okay.
Yep, usually yes.
All right, critically, a couple of things that were thought there. Of course, great characters, interesting plot, fun murder mystery with blundering crooks and cops, unique take on that genre. It was overwhelmingly positive. Understand that. You know, like when we're talking about like 40, like 36 were positive.
Yeah, 94% fresh, 91% audience, if I forgot to mention that earlier.
So when it came to pulling out what were the negatives, these were the things that really were, that were the kind of consistency. And that was, they thought it was a little too lowbrowed and just poking fun at the Minnesotan accent. Like, they didn't get the whole setting aspect. They were just like, this, just do the movie. It's an interesting movie. Why'd you have to add that in there? Just, it was just distracting and too lowbrowed. Okay. Probably not for people living in Minnesota, but okay. Mm-hmm. You critic from New York. Okay. You know, whatever, LA. And then the characters didn't have enough punch to either love or hate them.
I don't know that I agree with that.
Yeah, so much, I don't agree with that either.
Yeah, but it was the wording that they used was different. It was a little different than that. That was more of a summary of a couple different people's comments. But it was more of a, they kept using words like, you didn't have disdain for the bad guys and you didn't have love for the good guys. They were all just kind of there. So you didn't have anybody that you really grabbed onto. And I was like, well, that must be your opinion, because I think we all kind of grabbed onto different people. So,
right.
But that was really it. It wasn't a whole lot of anything we wouldn't expect from the critics.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't so much of like loving or hating anybody. It's sort of more just like observing all of this chaos that these characters are sort of creating and watching them sort of react to it, you know. And really the only character that I could even say that I have any sort of empathy with is Margie, because she's got to deal with all this crap and try to figure it out. And all these
just
other
people are like, oh, another murder.
Yeah.
Yeah, while walking around and hoping she doesn't, you know,
pop
at any moment. Exactly.
Well, see, in 2 months, apparently, so.
Nope.
But, yeah. So, what have we learned from Fargo? Well, we've learned that secondhand smoke is cancerated. Steve Buscemi is kind of funny looking in a general kind of way. Wood chippers are not the most discreet way to dispose of a body. And there's more to life than a little money, you know. And that is what we've learned from Fargo. Well, you know, this is one of those movies with a bunch of start and stopping and hiding and such. The only real character I liked in this movie was Marge. I really would have preferred to see a version of this movie that was just her story and leave the rest out of it.
Yeah, for me, it's a quirky, dark, quote unquote, comedy that certainly isn't for everyone. If you're a fan of the crime drama, though, you should definitely take a look at it. Some people can't seem to process the way this movie combines some over the top ideas with a matter of fact delivery. Like my mother did not understand this movie at all. She just was just like, I don't get it. But I, on the other hand, love it. You know, it's just one of those bizarre things that I could watch this many, many times.
I'm with you 100%. I love this movie. It has some intellectual moments where you just have to look past the strange looking and or sounding characters. Do you know what I mean? Just look past it and just think about what they're talking about. It's a solid, this could happen anywhere type movie, which is the whole point.
Yep.
So that's my thought.
I love that scene when the triple homicide scene. That's got to be my favorite one of them. Any case, let's add this to our flick chart. If it will load up for me now. I clicked the button. I love websites and stuff. There we go. All right, so let's rank this on our flick chart, starting with Fargo versus Avatar.
As Fargo.
Blue guys.
I would go with Fargo as well. I'd rather watch that again.
Fargo versus Jumanji.
Fargo.
Fargo versus The Dark Knight.
Ooh.
Fargo.
The Dark Knight for me.
I'm going to go with The Dark Knight.
Dark Knight. Sorry, my bad. I changed my mind.
That's okay. There was already 2-1. Now it's just...
I know, but I want to clarify. 0.
Fargo versus AI, artificial intelligence.
Fargo.
Fargo versus No Country for Old Men. Cohen versus Cohen.
Wow.
Fargo.
I'm going to pick Fargo, but I do love No Country for Old Men.
Again, both great movies. Fargo versus Back to the Future.
Fargo for me.
Say it again. What did you say? You were going in and out. I couldn't hear you.
Fargo versus Back to the Future.
Oh, Back to the Future for me.
I'm going to go with Back to the Future myself, too. And congratulations, Fargo is now 25 on our flick chart. So that's a nice position. Not too bad.
Mm. Right. I think that's fair.
So it hasn't really changed our top 10 at all. Moving on.
Into the present. When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The oddly released Paranorman.
Yes.
Rotten Tomatoes ratings 87% fresh. Not rotten. 80% audience. Directed by Chris Butler, Sam Fell. Starring the voices of Cody Smith McPhee, Anna Kendrick, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, plays something, Casey Affleck, and John Goodman.
Yep. So I'm going to start this by prefacing and letting you guys know that when I did go to see this movie, I went on about 2 hours of sleep.
Oh, bro.
So I had a really, really hard time staying awake while I was watching this. So my recollections are a little foggy, and my opinion of the movie may be slightly marred by that fact. So I'm gonna let you guys sort of take the lead on this one, even though I picked it. But yeah, I guess have either of you guys seen Coraline?
No, yes. I haven't.
I have.
You have. What do you think of Coraline, Steven?
Dark, you know. But it's been a while since I've seen it. I don't think that it was kind of what I wanted out of an animated movie, which is kind of a strange thing to say.
Right.
Because I think when you think animated, you don't think you're going to have to think that much. Laika makes animation for adults, in my opinion.
Yeah,
true. You know, which, but it looks like a kid's movie, but it's not really probably a kid's movie.
Yeah.
You know, a kid could see it and would never kind of get the overtones. But I don't think Coraline was really a kid's movie. It kind of had that dark, I mean, when you're talking about, like, you know, abuse, and those kind of things, it's not really a kid's movie.
Yeah, and I was sort of coming from the sort of opposite. When I saw Coraline, I totally in agreement with you that Coraline is not something I would totally consider a kid's movie, although they can watch it and enjoy it. But I think part of my opinion on this movie might have been tempered by the fact that I was expecting a little more Coraline than feel like I got. Don't get me wrong, what I did watch and remember watching instead of sleeping was an enjoyable film. I mean, I don't have any direct, you know, problems with it. I just think I was looking for something a little deeper. Although I will say that it was, I like how the movie is more about sort of, and this seems to be a theme with this production company. I don't know what their deal is, but it seems to be more about the fact that you have this person who has this ability that nobody else has, and they treat him differently. You know, he's the freak, he's the outcast, and it's sort of about, like, you know, teaching people to sort of not put people in that little, you know, not to set people like that aside.
Well, for the first like 45 minutes, I kept expecting to put like them to put like it gets better, or you know, or whatever, like anti-bullying messages through the whole movie, because that was what I felt like it was for the like first 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Was just it was like and going to end up being a, rather than this being about a horror movie or a scary movie, it was an anti-bullying message, and that was that. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of where I felt like it was going the entire time. Because, you know, sooner or later, the kid you're bullying could have to come back and save your life.
Right, right. Very much so. You know, that was sort of an overtone of the whole thing.
Yeah.
One of the things I do love, though, is I think this movie is beautiful in terms of the way it was made. It freaks me out to think this was shot using just a DSLR camera, you know. The way they did it, the way you know, I showed this trailer to somebody at work who was asking me what movies we were going to see, and they were like, "Oh, it's like one of those CG movies." I'm like, "No, that's not CG. That's all hand done, you know, puppets, stop motion, frame by frame, you know." And they were like, "Really?" They're like, "That looks really awesome." And I'm like, "Yeah, one of the things you have to understand is the way they did it was they, all those faces and everything, a lot of them they used a 3D printer to print them out so they could print, they could get them, you know, done quickly." And they had a whole team of people that were like, you know, painting and sanding. And so that's one of the, how, one of the ways they achieved the sort of, that sort of plasticky CG look of the characters, but have them actually be physical objects. But the one thing I love by the fact that it's a physical object, because a lot of times people are like, why spend all that effort manipulating these objects by hand, you know, when you could just build a computer model and manipulate them however you want, and it'd be a whole lot easier.
Right.
One of the things I love, though, is that when you do this for real, you get that real depth of field with the camera, the ability to change focus, you know, like without it seeing fake. It's not running through a bunch of Photoshop filters. It's an actual camera focusing on an actual object. And I think that comes through differently than if it would have been all CG.
Mm-hmm.
So I applaud them for continuing the art of this sort of hand done, you know, slow. It took them, you know, like what, 2.5-3 years to make this. So it's definitely something that you have to love to do, you know.
Now, did you guys stay through the credits at all?
No, I didn't.
I really didn't.
Yeah, if you stayed through the credits, one thing they did that was cool is it wasn't like anything major or anything, so you didn't miss much. But at the end of the credits, they basically had a time lapse of them building Norman.
Okay.
They had someone drawing out his skeleton framework thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they built the frame and then slowly built onto him Norman, and then they had him stand up and walk away off the desk.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of cool.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I didn't see that.
Yeah. It's because he didn't stay through the end of the credits. But nope. It's also a minor thing, so I don't think most people would have stayed that long.
I was completely by myself in a theater of 500.
Wow.
I was nice. Kind of tired. Yeah, I literally was. I walked in there. I was like, okay, it's a Tuesday night. You know, I'm like, I'm sure there'll be a couple people there. And I go to walk in, and I was like, wow, it's in one of the big theaters. And I walked in, and I'm like, not a soul. And I was like, yeah. Wow. So I like walked around to try to find a good seat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm just like, I don't want to sit all the way up here. I was like, went back down to the front. I was like, oh my God. I just couldn't. I was like, this is too weird to have the whole theater by myself.
Yeah, I've had that happen to me a couple times. I had maybe 10 or 15 people in the theater with me. And it was a... trying to think what time the movie was. It was like maybe 4:30 in the afternoon. So,
okay. I just went to see it at like a 7:30 show on a Tuesday night. Clearly, what probably was the issue there is that it's school's back in session here.
Right.
Middle school and high school started back last week, so
I had an actual problem trying to find, because like the theaters by me, they were only showing it a couple times a day, so
yeah.
I had a hard time actually picking a good time to go see it. And so I ended up, I wasn't going to go see it in 3D, but I ended up seeing it in 3D just because it was at a time that worked for me.
That's why I didn't see it in 3D. I didn't see it in 3D because it was too early. The 3D showings were the earlier showings. Yep. Same.
Okay. But yeah, so I had a decent amount of people in mind. The one thing that I was, and again, that we've sort of alluded to this, that I thought was weird is, why was this movie released in August? Like, this so seems like it should have been a Halloween.
Yeah, this one was well, a fun, kids movie.
I think it, to be truthful, I think it was what I just talked about.
Yeah.
The whole thing is about bullying.
Right.
From all sides of bullying, school starts
right
now for everybody. So I think, I mean, truthfully, I just think it was this, it was an interesting conversation around, I mean, because the whole thing about the one little girl was bullied by the seven people, and then she, you know, whatever, the Norman's being bullied at school, you know, I think to be truthful, it was now because kids are going back to school and they're trying to get that into kids' minds.
Right.
That's just the only thing I could think of.
It makes sense. I mean, I was kind of looking out into like October and seeing like, is there a reason why? Is there like other movies coming out in October that they don't want to go up against? Or is this their only release window? You know, I was looking in terms of that way. It just seemed like such a fit for an October movie, you know?
Yeah.
So it just seemed odd. But, you know, the other question I had is, really, should that matter? Should we only be able to release scary movies in October, or should they be, you know what I mean?
Right.
Are people not in the mood to see those types of movies in the rest of the year?
I think there is kind of I mean, this year was really weird. We saw some scary movies in January. Remember?
Yeah.
And there was another scary movie that came out this week, or that comes out next, you know, for the next week. The Apparition is coming out too. Now, a movie like The Apparition, I think that's just, they're just doing it now because it's going to get slammed in October when the good stuff comes out. Because it's, you know, it's going to be another found footage movie. But I do think you should be able to get scared year round. Yeah.
Yeah, although this wasn't that scary of a movie.
Right. Do you know what I mean?
Well, as far as October, it looks like we've only got, let's see, as things I would call like a October or Halloween-themed movie, we've got Frankenweenie, Sinister, which was moved back to October.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else do
VHS?
We have? VHS. Paranormal Activity 4 is the I would say, the big one. And Silent Hill.
Yep.
Well, it does come out October 26.
So, okay. So I don't know.
Not that scary of movies, or that many
so
scary
far.
Movies.
There'll be some more that pop up. You know, there will be.
Yep. So, was anybody shocked by the "You're gonna love my boyfriend" line?
I thought that was freaking hilarious.
That was surprising, but.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was amazing timing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I didn't, it's not like, I mean, because it's not really easy to tell on a character like that anything, but I was kind of sitting there going, like, he has absolutely zero interest in you. What's the catch here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just kept thinking, I'm like, there's a catch somewhere in here. He's got a girlfriend. He's got a, you know, there's something that's going to be a catch in the end.
Where he's and just so that, sick and doesn't really think about those things.
Right, right, right. But it was funny when he turned around and he's like, "You're going to love my boyfriend." That was awesome.
It's all about.
Yeah. He definitely did. Well, the kind of kept you guessing because you were like, you know, he's not really showing that much. Like, she's obviously interested in him. and he's just sort of like not either. He's like the clueless type, like doesn't get that she's interested, or he's just not interested. And it was like, oh, well, I guess he's really not interested.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
definitely. So, that was funny. Yeah, definitely thought that was funny. I think overall, I mean, we haven't. It's funny that one of the things we haven't even really talked about is the story itself. Mm-hmm. You know, because ultimately what happens is this kid has this ability to see ghosts. Nobody believes him. He comes to find out that that ability is going to help save the whole place.
City.
Because he's one of, you know, a generation of people who have in the past stopped the curse by talking to the witch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all this kind of stuff.
And he has the sixth sense.
Right. He's the next one to take over for it when his uncle passes away.
Right.
And blah, blah, blah. Well, everything comes down to it, and he's got to stop. You know, if he doesn't stop the witch, then the seven people who put her to death will actually come back from the dead. Blah, blah, blah. So, there, you know, there's this whole funky backstory. And it ends up going into a lot about, you know, about kind of basics of Salem witch trials-ish kind of stuff. And, again, continuing with this bullying message and, you know, and, like, getting revenge on people and stuff. And the whole story was interesting, but it didn't really kind of just grab you.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, what we really liked about the movie in general, and I would say it's the critics were kind of in the same way, that it looked awesome,
right.
But the story just didn't – nobody really even talked about the story, to be honest with you, in the critical side of things.
Everything looked great.
Yeah, it was really – I mean, it was super positive. Like, there were only – you know, of, like, the 20 or so people that had reviewed it, only, like, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 were even in the negative. And those things were mostly about the pacing, mostly about too many holes in the plot, and then it relied too much on the look. Okay, well, you know, that's kind of all about story, I suppose. And the positives it talked about, good for them to taking on good for Laika for taking on a scary subject, you know, that a lot of times for kids' movies, people aren't willing to take on. Good for mm-hmm. them. That it was a decent movie for both adults and kids. They'll both like it. Visually stunning. And Laika clearly has the market cornered on stop motion. Mm-hmm. Notice there's a lack of any conversation about story.
Right.
So I think we're all kind of falling into it too. And the fact that the story didn't particularly grab me. But I did keep wanting to see what was going to be around the corner. Because of the way it looked.
Did you think at all though, seeing that we're talking about it, is did you think at all that maybe that there was some of this material and the way it was presented that might be a little too dark for young kids?
Maybe a little.
Absolutely. I kept thinking because I mean I've mentioned them before. I've got nieces and nephews. They're 6, 8, and 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I always think in terms of which one would go with me to this movie.
Right.
I think if we turned off the audio, the 6-year-old would have liked it.
Okay.
The 8-year-old, she wouldn't have cared. This is not her kind of movie. I know that for a fact. So that's about personality, not age. The 10-year-old would have liked it because she would have been listening to it.
Right.
You would have tried to follow the whole thing, and I think she even would have gotten the message from the movie. So mm-hmm. I think it did take a younger kid, but Brandon, you know, my nephew is a little different, though. He's into action and adventure and all that kind of stuff. He would have liked the scary side, but I don't think every kid is going to relate to them.
Right.
Because there were some pretty gruesome characters, to be truthful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some gruesome characters. Some of the dead people were kind of scary, and
zombies were pretty scary. You know, like they had eyes hanging out and, you know, skin hanging off, and I mean, they were creepy. I mean, like it was not a Scooby Doo monster.
No,
I felt like it was a Scooby Doo monster.
Yeah, see, I was also kind of going into, like, even the fact that, you know, your main story sort of centers around this this witch, quote-unquote witch, who was essentially a little girl.
Who they killed.
Who they put to death. Which, right there is a little bit of a heavy topic for...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, like, okay. They put a little girl to death.
Right.
Right, exactly. So that's pretty... You know.
You know, I was reading some things up about this movie, and I guess there has been some a little bit of backlash from some people whose kids have seen it and have been having some issues after seeing it. So I told my boss is the one who asked me about it, and he's got kids. I think his youngest is like maybe 5. And the oldest is like 8 or 9. And I told him, I said, yeah, I don't know if, you know,
yeah,
it really depends on your kids. But I said, yeah, there's some stuff in here that's pretty, pretty scary.
Well, my nieces and nephews love Nightmare Before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Watch it every Christmas.
Right.
You know, so it's. They like that, and they liked Alice in Wonderland, the Johnny Depp version, right, you know, and stuff like that. So I think that they would, you know, but I don't know that this would be the movie that I'd take them to see, you know? Mm.
So. Yeah, it's one of those things, like, you really got to know your kids.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I can see that.
Yep.
All right. So what have we learned from Paranorman? Learn 3 things. Sometimes people say mean things when they are afraid. There's nothing wrong with being scared as long as you don't let it change who you are. And firing guns at civilians is the police's job. Oh, this is a delightful, fun movie. The plot is not really told in the trailer that much. Kind of reminding me of the Brave situation, but not quite. The animation was amazing.
Oh, I thought you meant the Brave Little Toaster. I thought you were... No. I was like, the Brave what? The Brave situation. I was listening. Sorry. Brave.
The animation was amazing. The voice acting spectacular. The story was... Okay. I think it's worth seeing in the theater, though. 3D is not a requirement, though.
Yeah. Like, again, and we keep coming back to this, which is funny. The movie was gorgeous to look at. I somewhat felt disappointed, though, because I was a big fan of Coraline. Although I did like the overall message of the movie, obviously. It just could be that I went to see it, you know, and I was tired and I had a hard time with it staying awake. But, you know, I just had an issue with that. Again, a warning that it might be a little too dark and scary for some younger viewers. The PG rating is there for a reason. And I agree. I would say, to skip the 3D. It's just doesn't seem like it really added anything for this particular movie. I think I might need to get a few hours of sleep and maybe watch it again. Maybe, you know.
Could be. I really wanted to love it. However, I only liked it. And again, it looked amazing, but I think the story kind of lacked.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Paranorman. Moving on into the future.
Hi. Welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
The Man with the Iron Fists. Releasing November 2nd, 2012. Directed by RZA.
Yeah.
Starring Russell Crowe.
Raza.
Russell Crowe, Kung Lee, and Lucy Liu. I almost said Chung Lee.
That would have been awesome.
In feudal China, a blacksmith who makes weapons for a small village is put into the position... Village? Village is put in the position where he must defend himself and his fellow villagers.
Yep. Not a whole lot of... I don't think this really needs that much of a extensive summary.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, okay, just watch the trailer. Because basically what it is Lucy Liu and I'm assuming Kun Li are battling it out. And it's a bunch of, like, it's a kung fu movie. with somewhat deadly weapons and a guy who decides that in order to fight, he's going to make iron gauntlets for himself. And it looks like he was fusing them to his hands, too, which would make, you know, eating and stuff really hard.
A little complicated.
Yeah, the normal stuff. But, you know, he's going to fight for his village, so he's going to have these iron tongue. Because if he hits somebody with those things, that's got to hurt.
Right.
And, so, everybody, we got kung fu fighting.
I think what's interesting about this, there's two points I wanted to kind of think about. One is, from what I've caught about this, it's really about, it's going to be mixing a lot of hip-hop with martial arts. Mm-hmm. Meaning whether it's hip-hop music or whether it's like hip-hop people in the movie, that kind of stuff. But it's actually taking that on. And because apparently a lot of hip-hop culture, there is some influence with martial arts movies and a connection and all that kind of stuff. Just like with Scarface, you know? Mm-hmm. So they're trying to make a connection there. And then number two is Quentin.
Here's my question about the Quentin thing, because I'm trying to figure this. His name's only on the trailer,
right?
He's not affiliated
with it, but I think he just signed over his name.
He's like, hey,
this movie looks great. Put my name on it.
Well, here's what I've been trying to figure out. So, okay, it says presented by. Okay, so I went in and did some digging, and I'm trying to figure out, okay, so what does it mean when it says in a film that something is presented by? Well, it usually means one of two things. It usually means that either it's been executive produced by, usually, or it can literally mean that that person is the one who introduces, does some sort of a voiceover introduction to the movie. So he may not have anything other to do with this movie than he might have a small part in the beginning as a, like an introduction. So, because I mean, he does not have any, at least on IMDb, he's got no producer or executive producer credits.
He's listed under other crew as presented by.
Yeah. So
or presenter.
Right. So I don't know if he really has anything other to do this, other than maybe he's giving us an introduction via a voiceover.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it can just, he's like, I think it's more of he gave his name to the movie. He's saying, hey, this looks like a cool movie. I'm gonna say, put my name on it.
Well, I mean, he's friends with Eli Roth, and he's done work with RZA before, because I believe RZA provided some music for Kill Bill. Mm-hmm. So they're basically like, you know, three buddies making a movie, and I'm sure they went, you know, if we give Quentin a little bit of a, you know, hey, would you mind doing this for us, so then we can attach your name to it. And it is sort of, when you see a, you know, it's one of those things, you see a movie that says, hey, it's either been presented by, or it's, you know, it's a Quentin Tarantino film or written by him or whatever. It's almost like you have a certain audience built in to automatically go, I'm going to see this because he has something to do with it. You know, it sort of identifies the movie as being in a particular genre or being, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if that is sort of the case. Like, you know, hey, buddy, can you do this for us so we can attach your name to the film? Because I'm pretty sure that you have to do something, either even if it's as little as possible, for the union rules in Hollywood, for you to be able to have your name on the film. You know what I mean? I don't think you can do absolutely nothing, and even if it's just going, hey, Quentin,
get credit for something, right?
Right. Even if it's just them going, hey, Quentin, we're making this movie. What do you think of it? And he goes, yeah, sounds cool. He's technically involved with the film, and they could put his name on it. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I put this on here just because when I saw the trailer, I'm like, how can we not at least mention this film? Because it's just this crazy, over the top thing that, you know.
Well, we're also going to watch it. So.
Yeah. So.
Great.
Really? Come on.
I'm only going for Batista. Yeah. So y'all can just that'd be the only reason I'm going to see this movie.
See, for me, it's Quentin Tarantino involvement. Lots of over the top violence, a la Kill Bill, except probably more. Magic-ish armor, dude. The guy who like the brass dude thing.
That's Batista. Like,
has it? The, yeah.
He's a wrestler, or former wrestler.
I'm not talking about his body. Just the fact the armor comes like disappears and comes back and stuff like that.
But Batista can do whatever he wants as long as he doesn't talk.
I'm sold.
Because I heard him, talk on Comic-Con when they were talking about this movie, and I don't need the voice.
Look, I'm not expecting an amazing movie, but it will be super fun to watch. And Russell Crowe's in it. Come on.
I'm just picturing Steven going up to him, just going, shh, don't talk.
Just
put the before you start.
You're right on the lip. On the lips. Just
yep.
Shh.
Yep. So this has to be possibly one of the most over-the-top, ridiculous trailers I've seen in a great many years. Not probably since Machete. I'm so there.
Yeah, clearly Quentin is only making self-indulgent movies these days. I'm not sure about the whole mixing of hip-hop and martial arts and stuff, but Batista looks hot, and Lucy Liu is always awesome, so I'm down with her.
Yeah. I think we all have the same idea. Yeah, this is going to be like a bad movie overall, but it's going to be so much fun to watch. Or at least that's my theory. Speaking of fun to watch movies, let's talk about coming attractions next week. We're going to be talking about the Heroic Trio. And the president will be taking
speaking of martial arts movies.
Exactly. And the president will be taking a look at Premium Rush with our boy...
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Thank you. And in the future, we're taking a look at the new James Bond film, Skyfall. There's plenty of ways to contact us. Pop over to our website, COMovies.com. Leave a comment on a blog. Shoot us an email at COMovies@gmail.com. You can also send us a little voice file email there. You can also leave us a voicemail through our Google Voice line at 361-265-8255. That's 361-COL-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COMovies, Facebook at facebook.com/COMovies, Google Plus at gplus.2/COMovies. Pop over to iTunes, find us, leave us a 5-star review. We need to get back onto a page, please. Appreciate it. Final thoughts.
I'm just glad to have Steven back.
Yay!
Aw, you're so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you know?
Rachel.
Don't
you know?
Yeah.
Don't you know?
This is such an awesome show.
Mm-hmm. I hope you enjoy the Heroic Trio. I can't say
so do I.
Trio. Yeah, it's old. It's an old school. It's an old school martial arts movie. So just be prepared.
So with that for me, for Fuzz, for Steven. Terrible.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.